And you find that people that are combat veterans don't get as flustered as people that haven't been in stressful situations. I would think the same would be true of first responders, and anybody that's been in high stress situations can come in and work in a much more calm way than people that haven't been tested like that.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Agil Yao. I'm founder and CEO of Tonkin. And today I have the very pleasure of hosting Lee Kirby. Hey, Lee. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Well, Lee, you have a fascinating background, which I want you to tell me all about. But to do the very highlight, Lee is currently the co-founder of Salute Mission Critical, which is a global data center services. And I really want to hear your guys' focus and how you work with military veterans. But you are a retired U.S. Army colonel with a decorated 36 years career that spent Iraq, Afghanistan, and Haiti. Thank you for your service first and foremost, and thank you for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Maybe we start there then. So tell us a little bit about the Salute Mission Critical, but also, you know, I'm always curious of how you ended up in technology and different roles you did, and kind of be a bit of a synopsis of that long career in the military.
Sounds good. I'll just start from the beginning because it's kind of intertwined. I had a great childhood growing up in rural Appalachia, and knew that I was going to join the military because that's how I would get my GI Bill and my college education. So in 1976, I went in the military and I did my 4 years as an enlisted man. Got out and stayed in the reserves because I always wanted to serve my country. And I always consider it a pleasure. So when people thank me for my service, I want to thank them back for letting me serve. And I think it's a great honor to be able to serve the country. And so I stayed in the reserves and I got my college and I ended up getting a commission. So I went from enlisted ranks to an officer in 1982. So from 76 to 82 seemed to fly by very quickly and stayed in the reserves. Got called up for Haiti in the mid 90s. And while I had gotten out of the reserves, out of active duty, I wanted to be in computers and they were new at the time. So mainframe computers and programming, and became a programmer and loved technology and how fast it was changing, and went through that rank and moved up through the ranks and had a career in technology. And then when 9/11 came along, I'd been going up through the reserve ranks and was an officer at the time. And I had stayed in the infantry, but had specialized in a thing called civil affairs, which works outside of the infantry, making sure that you can take care of the governance and public health and public services and rebuild the countries and things like that. So we were very popular after 9/11. So I was activated 6 more times. So started out with 4 years active duty, ended up with 10 and a half years active duty altogether. And so my entire career was 36 years when I retired in 2012. 10 and a half of it active duty, and you have to retire at some point. So I retired then, but I was fortunate in that each time I was recalled to active duty, I could come back and restart my career that I'd had in IT. But a lot of my compatriots weren't as fortunate. They came back and had to start from ground zero. And at the time in 2012, we'd had 2 surges in Iraq. We'd had an economic meltdown in 08, 09. And if you had done like me and were a young troop, enlisted and got out after 4 years, chances were 25% chance you were unemployed. And your counterpart, if they had not served, they were about 8% unemployed. And I wanted to do something about that. There was another problem in my industry, the data center industry, is that there was a personnel shortage. So I thought those two problems could work together and started a company with my partner, Jason Oakroy, called Salute Mission Critical. And the goal of that was not to recruit just people that had data center experience, but to recruit all veterans into our company, train them to become data center technicians and deliver data center services. So Salute has grown since 2013 when we started it to quite a large size company now, almost 2,000 employees in 20 countries. We hire the veterans, we teach them what they need to know to become technicians and start their career. And we put them on the project teams and the operations teams to run data centers worldwide. And they start a great career because what they learned in the military, they can translate into civilian careers and learn new technology. And it's been a great success, both personally rewarding and professionally rewarding since then. And that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Well, congratulations, first of all. This sounds like a great initiative. And then 2,000 plus employees, it's a great company. It's not easy to get to that size.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things going from nothing to something like that, and how you have to plan and replan and keep planning and work the organization and make sure you've got the capital. So it's not like you just put your feet on the desk, but it's a great learning experience.
Absolutely. Very well. Well, thanks for the, you know, for the summary. I think one thing that was very immediate when you were talking through it is also how much have changed. I think kind of talked about it in the pre-show. I always like to look at some of those, you know, commonalities in different angles of it. But so being in IT through, you know, the last 30 years, clearly crazy time, right, to be in IT. Like every half a decade is almost like a whole new ecosystem. How was it in the military from that angle? Like, you know, I also spent some time and served in the Israeli military. I know a little bit of there's this strange thing in military, usually where it's the same time cutting edge as it is behind the market in other ways. What was your experience? I'm curious, and we can talk about what we allowed to talk about, but I'm sure it's interesting.
The military and our industry are very similar. If you're not constantly learning, you're falling behind. When I visit military bases now and see the weapon systems they're using, I feel like I was using a flintlock when I was in the military because things changed so quickly, and it's such advanced armament, and all the things that they're using now wasn't around when I was in just 12 years ago when I retired. So our industry is the same way. When I started with the punch cards and putting them into the big mainframes, and then just 5 years ago in this industry, we were cooling data centers with air, but now we're cooling them with water and air, and the mix of technologies and how quick it's changed just in the last 2 years, and it'll keep changing rapidly like that. And that's why I think veterans are such a good match for this industry, because the first thing you are taught in the military and basic training is how to learn, and how to learn quickly, and how to adapt, because in those first 12 weeks, you change a person from, I was a local yokel from the hills of Tennessee, and then I came out 12 weeks later, a whole different person that knew how to adapt and overcome and think critically. And I think that's why it's been such a good experience bringing veterans into the industry, because they are fast learners and they adapt and they overcome.
Let's talk a little bit about more of the data centers world as well. I think the last few years, you know, it's more than a couple of years now, but definitely the last couple of years have brought back the importance of, if you will, compute, and a lot of compute and a lot of data, obviously, with AI and large language models. And I also think there's a lot of conversations about, you know, what are the right type of roles for people to go and study and people to go and do. And I think you, in one way, you already touched on it with what it requires to be, you know, in the military and really sort of like first to train yourself to learn and to adapt. That's kind of trying to weave together those two topics, right? On one hand, here is your experience and what you guys have been seeing in the last few years in the data center world, but also how do we kind of encourage new folks going into the workforce or thinking about, you know, what it is they need to learn and so on. There's a lot of questions like that now with, you know, with AI.
And it's changing so quickly. I think a lot of the young people that are going into the workforce need to not try to specialize too early. They need to get a good round. They need to understand mechanical and electrical, not just one or the other, because they're coming together and converging. When you look at liquid cooling to the chip, it used to be that your IT environment and what we call the critical environment, where the air conditioning was and such, were separate, but now they're coming together. So you have to have an understanding of all of those principles and all of the procedures that 2 years ago were fine. Today, they're not fine anymore. They have to change, and they have to change almost constantly as the technology is changing, so that people are doing things different today than they were 3 months ago. And that's where I think that adaptability and that mindset, and if the young people entering the workforce today will understand the foundation principles underneath that, but also understand that they're going to have to constantly be learning and adapting, and understanding the underpinnings will help that, but also the moving at the speed of the industry, because the industry is moving so fast. And you see AI as it, these large learning modules that are out there and what they're combining up. And you look at things that would take you 280 years to learn if you sat down and did it, and they're doing it in 30 minutes. It's going to be fascinating. And just 2 years from now, what we'll be seeing it produce and what it's produced already in the last couple of years is mind-blowing and exciting.
Absolutely. So through all of this change, you know, sometimes it's also interesting to me, at least, to try to find, like, what are the principles that they did not change, right? So when you think about your IT experience and your military experience through 36 plus years, what are some of the constants? Like, what are some of the things that you feel like were true the day you started and true somewhere in the middle and are also true, like, after then at the end of that, you know, when you retired and started Salud? Like, what are the things you feel are constant through those changes and are important to maybe stay constant?
It becomes a human element, the values base part of the interaction person to person. We really push our culture of being open and transparent with each other, being able to have a dialogue and being able to have the tough conversations too. And we don't do annual performance reviews. We feel like we do performance reviews every day. If something goes wrong, everybody gather and learn from it. It's not a thing to be pointing fingers. It's a thing to be learning from. So we've had that kind of culture. And with that culture, I think you really unleash the power of the workforce. So you don't have a workforce that's scared to make a mistake. You have a workforce that sees a mistake as a learning opportunity. You've just unleashed the power of your entire workforce. And that, I think, has been one of the fundamental keys to the success of Salud, is we have that culture that embraces that and makes everybody feel comfortable and that they have a voice at the table and they can come and say, this should be done differently, no matter where they're at in the organization, and they're heard. And having that human element and that cultural platform, I think, is the thing that's going to stay constant, no matter what kind of technology you're dealing with, and that makes, really differentiates companies from each other. And I believe you see that in the bottom line results of any company that embraces that kind of culture.
So if I kind of expand on that for a second, right, I think there's a very interesting bridge you guys are building, an important bridge for folks, veterans, you know, folks lived in the military and are, like you said, maybe more prone to have a hard time finding, landing a new job as they come out, and bring them the opportunity to learn. And, you know, of course, if they have the experience already, but if not, train them. If we kind of zoom out though, and we look at it in the global workforce, I think people that are not involved in the military might not necessarily have full visibility to some of the skills and sort of like methodologies that are ingrained into the workforce and can be leveraged, you know, as folks come in and you bring them into your workforce, they bring with them discipline, they bring with them innovation though too. And so maybe in your words, kind of like, what are the key things you guys are seeing and you know, to look for, but also almost expect, you know, folks that are coming from service to, you know, the fundamentals to bring, you know, to the organization? I think it's actually a big good idea for folks that are not as familiar to know, like, what, you know, what they might be missing and worth exploring bringing into their teams.
We've been trying to teach others in our industry and even teach the military itself to look beyond what you think that person did, because they'll see an infantryman and they'll think, oh, they need to go to the police force or via security services. But an infantryman maintains their equipment, their weapon systems, their comms gear, and they've got very sophisticated devices that they're integrated into that are high-tech devices. A data center technician does the same thing, just different equipment. So we hire people that are considered combat arms people and turn them into data center technicians because they follow procedures for this equipment. They just need to be taught new equipment. And they've been hugely successful, where they would have been doing a minimum wage job working as a security guard and just a waste of talent. We hire cooks as project managers because people think of them going into food service. They don't realize that a cook has to deliver 3 safe to eat meals in austere conditions, sometimes to hundreds of people. And the planning that goes on behind that is a project manager. And they don't realize that that's a project manager disguised as a food server. And they push them down a food service route rather than taking that project management skill set and bringing that to the forefront. And they miss so many great talented people. So we've tried to pull the talents that are behind this, what you think that person did in the military out to the forefront and basically exploit those for their advantage so that they see that that's the real skill set in the civilian industry. And having got the what they call transition assistance programs to really catch on to that yet, because they keep pushing people based on what's called your MOS, military occupational skill, down the military occupational skill path that sends them down to food service or sends them down to security service. So we try to catch them before they get to the temp side and get them into a technology role, because so many people will be looking at just 5 or 20% of the military thinking they're technical when it's actually the entire military is technical.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at Tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
This is exactly what I was hoping for. This is exactly the type of misunderstanding. You know what's amazing to me as you were describing it? That mislabeling and shallow look at job description or role description, I feel like it's going to be a global issue with AI so soon, because folks will be like, oh no, we don't need this role anymore. So all these folks, you know, don't have a job anymore. And then you realize, well, what? Wait a second. Like what this job actually required, like what type of skills were you actually leveraging? Guess what? There's like that skills are still cannot be automated. And then there's still a lot of other version of this role that are now might even have a higher risk and a higher, you know, impact of those skills. And so sharpening those. And I think it's so vivid, your example with the cook and the project manager. People think about a cook, they think about someone serving a meal for, you know, 10, 20 people. And the RV, you need to serve hundreds, and you need to, you know, it's a scale problem. Then finding people that can handle and both plan and execute scaling problem is actually pretty rare. How do you create more visibility for this though? This is clearly like, I don't think anyone would listen to this episode and would not shake their hand and be like, oh my God, I would have never thought, you know, a cook to be a great project manager, like an army cook to be a great project manager, right? This is fundamental, I think, positioning, marketing, you know, positioning problem.
And there's another hidden jewel that if you can get people to overcome that and look at all 200,000 veterans coming off of active duty, 85% of them are married, and people look at a spouse of a military person and they think they're job hoppers because their resume changes mm-hmm. every time their spouse gets change of station. What we look at, and it finally dawned on me because of all that my wife went through with all my deployments, is you've got a very resilient person that's just like a veteran that learns and adapts and overcomes. And you look past that resume that looks like a job hopper and look at that as adaptable, quick to learn, and get them into a position that they'll figure out. And that's a valuable workforce as well. So we got our training program set up to where it would take military spouses in as well. So now you've just doubled your potential talent pool that you're going after with very similar attributes. And military spouses, talk about contingency planning under pressure. If their spouse has gone down range and may or may not come back, they've got a plan to do both jobs and got a plan for possibly doing the job going forward without them. And so they're great contingency planners and project managers and whatever they want to be, because they've had to figure it out and adapt and overcome. Those kind of skills are what you want in a workforce.
You know, what's interesting? Oh, first of all, like that is also, you brought it up. I think this is very, very, very true when it comes to the spouses and you know, the very, I guess, like, usually it would be like a yellow flag. I don't know if you're a red flag, but a yellow flag on a resume where it's like, why is this person jumping so much? And if you don't ask, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know. And so many times, like, I don't think people like to put on their resume, you know, married to, you know, and that's kind of like then not counted in as while at the same time, this is actually sort of like a badge of honor because you're supporting that life, and that by itself is an example of a skill and an attribute that is useful and powerful. So I agree with you. I think where I was kind of going with it is that also reminded me that really when you zoom out of that topic, but then zoom into just like any generic management role, and you're looking at your team and you're looking at sort of like how do you grow managers, how do you kind of grow the next leadership, I found, at least from my experience, and I think many, many others that I spoke to as well, so many times you find kind of like the diamond in the rough and the sort of like the superstar, someone that has nothing to do with this role, and just like a really smart move of like changing, someone's position to something else when there's an opening, like a middle management or a director level, let's say, kind of got opened up. And then all of a sudden, senior management are doing like a very quote unquote weird move, right? Where they bring someone who has no prior experience similarly into this role, all of a sudden to manage that team or that group, and they end up being very successful. And I know as a leader of a company, that's always like what you're the most proud of, because you were able to kind of like truly do like your job, which is finding just like a coach of a team of football, soccer, or basketball, whatever sport team, identify. So like really what is the thing that this person is very good at, and finding that fit. And I think this is, to me, that was always like the right philosophy is, don't look for the experience, look for the attitude, don't look for the knowledge, look for the skill kind of thing. Right. And I like that, that philosophy to be then attributed also to folks, from areas you don't understand, but also, understanding people where they're coming from, what's their family situation like. And that can tell you a lot about their skill set too. I always find it, you learn that someone has like 9 siblings, that tells you something about them. If you learn that they grew up in a certain way, or those are all benefits to that build their character and then can help your team, your organization, your sport team, or your
I think it's always good to move around in leadership roles and get different experiences, because you don't have to be the technical expert to be the leader of a team. And you empower your team and rely on their expertise, but be out in front of them on the planning side of it. And good leaders know how to empower team and bring the best out of that team. So I don't think it needs necessarily technical expertise.
Maybe a little bit controversial topic for a second. Do you feel that folks coming from active duty, especially, if they were, on the field and the front in certain cases, more mature than their counterparts that may be coming off with a similar age, similar kind of like time of experience, but when they came through active duty, they are more mature and are sort of like older in their approach to work and so on?
I do. I think it gives you a good sense of perspective too. Some people lose their mind over little things, and I think it shows your character. If you lose your mind over little things, that gives you that perspective that, hey, if we're not losing lives here, we're not fighting cancer, this is just an office, we're behind schedule, let's figure out how to get ahead of schedule. We don't need to lose our mind. Let's lay out the facts. None of this is personal. Let's get it on track. And you find that people that are combat veterans don't get as flustered as people that haven't been in stressful situations. I would think the same would be true of first responders, and anybody that's been in high stress situations can come in and work in a much more calm way than people that haven't been tested like that. But when you've been tested in a high stress situation, I think it gives you that kind of perspective.
Yeah, I found, just to kind of like run it out, like I found that even that training, that 12 weeks, by itself, yeah, like you said, someone comes in one way and comes out a different man. Like, I think that difference is 80% of it is just maturity. You kind of like came in raw and, like any kid is, and, come out just a lot more prepared, because that's the job. The job is to take kids and make them prepared, you know, for what to come.
Build your competence. It's built your character. I think it does so much for you that even before you go to combat, you're ready. That training instills it in you. And you can see it time and again when people finally do get in the situation, their training kicks in and it becomes second nature, not having to think through it. It's just automatic.
Yeah, I think we can use some of that in every organization. I think that helps elevate the team a lot. You can see that it put a different standard on a conversation. Like you said, the example you gave with not getting flustered over emotional about things, that's just one example. There's other things too, like, you know, where a different, just even the conversation might happen in certain situations, or how we react to things, but also how we plan to things for things and how do we prioritize things. And a lot of that is clearly, clearly different when you have someone that has more experience. But really, they're more matured. Sometimes we confuse the two, experience and maturity. And because this so many times come together, you know, people get more mature as they usually also get more experienced. But that they're not actually this. They're actually two parallel things. You can be very mature with little experience, and you can have a lot of experience and very immature person, right? And so the ability to add more maturity, just like adding more experience to a team, really elevated the entire team. And that's kind of like where I was going with it.
Yeah. You think of a 28, 30 year old soldier that's in charge of 40 individuals and millions of dollars worth of equipment, and their lives are in the decisions that they make. And that builds your maturity very quickly. And I think they come out of the service with a whole different mindset and level of maturity that can't be matched.
Yeah. The gravity of it too, right? Like, that's kind of the point, right? Same 28 person might have also, parallel 28 person might have also managed, like, you know, 40 people team and a budget of several million. Oh, that's comparable experience. But the maturity level might not even be close, you know, with what you said, right? With just the impact of a decision, the working on a certain projects that are far more risky or something literally just real, you can just feel them. And so, yeah, that's a great point. So I think mixing and bringing this all together makes a lot of sense. And again, I think obviously it's a noble cause, but I like to look at it from like a practical reason too. And kind of, you know, that's kind of where I wanted to focus on this here is like, you know, it's very practical and very wise to actually incorporate this skill set into an organization. Of course, then it's also, you know, paying back and helping veterans is a noble cause, but I don't like to look at things as help because I actually think there's a real value here that you guys unlocked. And again, I'm going to use your example with a cook for a long time.
And that's what we've tried to get our industry to realize is look beyond the noble cause. There's an ROI with this. The thousands of dollars are put into veterans in their training, and you don't get any better leadership training anywhere than the military. And look at that as the monetary value that's been put into these troops, and then they come out. And you're looking, if you don't take advantage of that, you're letting dollars go out the door.
Yeah.
So grab hold of that.
Yeah, it's just good ROI. That's the perfect way to say it. Very good. Well, last question, maybe, you know, we talked about kind of like what you do to help and how you started, but something I always like to ask on a personal note, what is something that good advice maybe you got early in your career or through your career that you feel like it's worth paying forward?
When I first heard it, I had an older gentleman that was mentoring me, and he said, if you forget everything else, just know as a good leader, you have to be predictable. And I scratched my head for a little while, and he explained further, and he said, if you're predictable, that means that you've got a good value set, you're grounded, your foundation is solid, and if your people under you can predict how you'll make a decision and can predict how you'll react to stimuli, that means that you're grounded and you're solid. And they know you and that you've been a good leader. So a good leader is predictable. So I always tried to be transparent and predictable. And that one phrase always stuck with me. And throughout my career, be predictable. A good leader is predictable.
I like that. I see what you mean. It also means you're able to create a culture around you in the organization that knows what to expect and what's a standard of a good look like and it can operate in your absence too. So it's, I like it.
Yeah, it's the same environment. They know what to expect.
Nice. Awesome. Lee, thank you so much for your time and your pearls of wisdom, and appreciate you joining the show.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.